Welcome to another episode of Camber Eats. I'm your host, Felix Baskin. On the show today, we interview Eric Oberholzer. He is a chef, entrepreneur, and sustainability advocate, most known as the co-founder of Tender Greens. Currently, he is the managing partner at Cohere, advising purpose-driven food brands on strategic growth, sustainability, and social impact. Let's get to the interview.
Welcome.
Thank you for welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you for joining us. Till next time, stay hungry.
Welcome.
Glad to have Eric joining us for this show, and welcome.
Good to be here.
And great. So before we get into obviously your whole background, obviously the great things you've been doing, I always ask everybody in food service because it always fascinates me. Number one, how did you get interested in food service, and what made you decide to make your life, so to speak?
Yeah, it really started at the Four Seasons Hotel in Philadelphia. I was working there while I was in college, and just fell in love with, you know, hospitality, which led into wine. And at the time, this is back in the mid 80s, you know, the whole California wine movement was happening. And then concurrently, there's just a lot happening in San Francisco, around food. And I immersed myself in food, in Philadelphia. And then later, you know, after college, I went to culinary school, and it was just one of those things. I caught the bug. It's also an industry that you can navigate the world. Everybody understands it, and you can navigate uncertain times. And whether we're in a pandemic or a financial crisis or whatever is happening, people always have to eat. So you can always find a role to play, and you know, the good times and the tough times.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way to look at it. Okay, so as we progress through that, where did the idea for Tender Greens come about? Was that a slowly evolving thing? Is that like this is it, and we got to figure out a way to do it? How did that come about?
Yeah, I guess the initial spark was when I was at Campton Place in San Francisco, and I was standing in this long line in a taqueria in the Mission District where I lived, and it was just buzzing, and there was sort of this democratized experience, you know, anywhere from, you know, the mayor to the guys working on the street outside would be in line, and everybody in between. The food was super fresh, and as I was waiting in line, I was thinking to myself, like, how could I do the kind of food that I do, but in this format, you know? So not a taqueria, but you know, the theater of a Mission taqueria, and you know, that sort of interaction you have across the pass. So years later, when I was at Shutters on the Beach in Santa Monica as a chef, and started to look at the gaps in the market in LA, I came back to this idea, and you know, it was sort of a simple concept to bring, you know, good food, really healthy, fresh food, to a lot of people at a price point that, you know, they could all absorb, and a service model that was fast for those who wanted to, you know, rush on, and then for those who wanted to stay and have a glass of rosé or whatever, we built the restaurants to, you know, give people enough of a dining experience that once they went through the line, they've really felt sort of taken care of.
Very cool. And as that expanded, or as you thought about expansion, how did you think about keeping? Because the reason I ask about the, I'm going to get to the focus on quality and making sure everything is obviously carries over from one location to the other. How did you deal with that, or what things did you kind of put in place to make sure that took place there? Because again, a lot of folks I talked to, they said that's the biggest thing as they go from even one location to two. You know, how did you guys manage that?
Well, I mean, we made the food simple, the concept really relatively simple. And then as we opened new stores, I brought in chefs who had worked for me in the past. So I had a pretty good network, a deep bench of talent, all of whom were ready to get out of, the 14-hour days that they were working and do something that was a little different. And we knew that they were good chefs. We knew that they were good leaders. But what every chef, ultimately wants to do is become his or her own boss. So we promised to develop these chefs into entrepreneurs and gave them a fraction of the action, and gave them enough creative freedom to stay excited. But also, standard recipes and supply chain that kept it consistent. And when you have talented chefs in the details every day, then you can scale with that talent. And that's what we did.
Very good. So I want to talk a little bit about the Sustainable Life Project that you kind of started there. Tell me, again, obviously with this new venture and everything else like that, is this something that an event that came about that happened to you on the path to this initiative, or something that you always wanted to do?
My frustration with homelessness started when I moved to Philadelphia. I grew up in a small college town, and everybody took care of their neighbors. When I got to Philadelphia, it was there was so much poverty. There were people sleeping in the streets, and there didn't really seem to be a solution. And I got to know some of these folks over time. And then when I moved to other cities, San Francisco was the same, LA was the same, and I always felt that I could, if we could, we would do something about it. And as a restaurant group, as chefs, coming back to the opening statement, everybody has to eat. And these folks are often in crisis. But if you teach them how to cook and feed others, then, it's like the old saying, you give a person a fish and they eat for the day. If you teach me the fish, they eat for a lifetime. And that was sort of the approach. Let's teach these folks how to cook, what it's like to show up as a member of the team, build up their confidence, and if they do well, then we bring them on full time, and they're off and running. And over the years, we graduated hundreds of kids. It was our focus was on emancipated foster youth, and these are the folks who are least likely to succeed statistically and most likely to fall through the cracks of society. And we were able to change the path for a lot of these kids, and some of them went on to run Tender Greens restaurants, which is an amazing thing to see when you think of somebody who came in really at risk, unhoused, and really let down by every corner of society, and then through their own gumption and grit and our guidance, you know, they find themselves in leadership positions with making $100,000 a year. And when they stand in front of a group of new recruits, you know, a lot of those recruits see, you know, themselves in that. And it's one thing for me to get up and talk about it. It's, I'm getting even choked up a little bit. Something else to just, you know, to see these kids as a source of inspiration.
I understand. And so, I would recommend for everybody, I saw your TEDx talk on this topic, and it was as fascinating as on YouTube. So, yeah, it was, that's a really, I was doing a little research on you and your background, and it really stood out to me how often this the Sustainable Light Project really came about in all these different discussions and topics and things like that. And I think, you know, over less than, obviously you've seen over the last 10 decade plus years, sustainability obviously has been a big thing, but also community involvement, as far as, you know, big in food service. What advice would you give to restaurants and businesses to kind of like authentically integrate these practices?
We made it part of our business model. So the Sustainable Life Project was self-funded, right? So we weren't out, we didn't throw galas, we didn't ask for money, we didn't accept donations. It was, you know, once it was up and running, it was a line item in the budget. And then, you know, I eventually housed it in human resources. And obviously with a connection to operations, but, you know, you just integrate it into the business model. And that way it's, you know, it's always sponsored by a budget. There's structure to it, and the entire ecosystem wraps their arms of support around these kids, and therefore it's super successful. And it doesn't really trip us up. You know, it's, we're just doing what we already do. We're just doing it a little differently for these folks. And that would be my recommendation. Like, don't stop what you're doing and go clean up the beach, or, you know, do a holiday soup line or whatever. I mean, those things are fine. But if you really want to make an impact, find a way to make your business model impactful for people and bring them into it, and it becomes more sustainable, in because you're really getting to some systemic issues, some root causes, versus too often I think we just address symptoms, and that's fine, but it's, you know, we don't fix anything. And what I always aim to do is fix it to the best of my capabilities. And the other thing is about, you know, with self-funding, you know, you can be very centered on the mission, and organizationally agnostic, meaning we can work with anybody. We're not competing for funding dollars or attention or clients or whatever. We're just out there trying to do the best work. And when we can plug into somebody else's organization and add, you know, be additive, then we do that. And if they can do the same for us, then we plug them into what we're doing. And that way you're working together. And not,
can you stop here? Hear me?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. I've got a goofy connection.
It's like you froze.
Yeah. 1 second here. Okay. Is that better? Can you still hear and see me?
I can hear you. Now you're back. There you are.
Okay. Sorry about that. I apologize.
Do you mind taking that one from the top? I'll
edge out with that again. I apologize. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. So my advice to others is to, you know, find a way where your business model can, you know, create systemic change for folks you want to help. And, you know, jobs is a great way, job training. But it's more than just a paycheck and work. It's the family and the culture of a, whether it's an office or a restaurant or whatever it might be. I think that's what was really powerful, was that, you know, these kids in our case who really felt like they were on the fringe and they were let down by everybody were embraced and cared for and held accountable too. So,
yeah, it wasn't just like a handout. It wasn't just something, like you said, once a year and so nice to do. It helps if you truly make it part of your business.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a appendage, so to speak, or something that you do from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we call it, you know, the Sustainable Life Project. We wanted it to be sustainable, not a start or finish. You know, we were happy to have these folks with us through the entire journey.
Okay. Since your beginnings there at Tender Greens, how have you seen consumer expectations change as far as sustainability, transparency? How have you seen, obviously, consumers expect more of this from food service?
Yes and no. I think to some degree, there were so many businesses, not just in food, but everywhere, that, you know, made claims of sustainability. And then, you know, when you look under the hood, they weren't all that sustainable. And I think that, and myself included, you know, you begin to feel a little exhausted with the claims that don't seem to be woven into the product or service. So yes, I think people continue to care. But there's a need to verify. There's a need for transparency, because there are so many false claims out there. And there's a lot of confusion around the language of sustainability. So, you know, take the regenerative movement, you know, so regenerative organic agriculture has a very specific definition. Regenerative agriculture has a much looser definition. And for consumers, it's all the same. And there must be, you know, five or six regenerative certifications, all with different parameters. So I think consumers are confused, because there are a lot of confusing messages out there. And I think there's a crisis a crisis of transparency and labeling.
That's true. Yeah. Is that one of the, because I wanted to get into some of the trends you've seen in food service, what are one or two kind of negative ones that you've seen that you wish you weren't seeing lately as far as impacting food service?
I mean, I guess the one that I'm, let's use sustainability, you know, people will throw that out, you know, all of our ingredients are from sustainable sources. But if they're not third-party verified, then that doesn't mean anything. Sure. So you really do need these certifications to at least hold people accountable. I think it's the same thing with regenerative, to my point. You know, there are labeling wars and there are marketing tricks to dupe people into believing that something is better for the environment and better for them, and the truth is oftentimes that it's not. So consumers are sponsoring something that they believe to be just and good, but it's a false promise.
Sure. What are, on the flip side of that, what are some positive trends you see in food service that you like?
You know, I think there are those out there who are being more mindful of, around waste, both food waste and, you know, single use plastic waste. And not all, but, you know, I see a movement and effort to really reduce waste. Some of that is good for the bottom line. And a lot of it is good for the environment. So that would be one. There is more and more organic product in the supply chain available at a, you know, at a reasonable price. So I think, you know, the organic movement continues to stay relevant, and, you know, doubling down on the regenerative organic movement. I think people are beginning to see the value in that. But it's very much at the, you know, the boutique or regional scale. There aren't a lot of big national players in that space.
Right. Okay. So your current role, you're managing partner at Cohere. Tell us a little bit about that.
So when I stepped away from Tender Greens day to day, I took a little bit of time off, looked around and tried to decide what I was going to do. And, my now wife she's the founder of Cohere. And it's traditionally a branding and marketing firm. And, you know, I was historically dismissive of marketing, you know, for all the reasons I just described. You know, it tends to be that the business of, you know, smoke and mirrors and distraction and what have you. And she was very good at it. And yet she was doing it for, I think, just causes. She started in Philadelphia and really got her start in adaptive reuse and placemaking in the real estate world. And then if you want to, you know, redefine a community, you're going to bump into restaurateurs. So she started working with, you know, groups like Stephen Starr and Keith McNally and people like that. And yet, you know, there's a limit to what you can do with marketing and branding. So I joined to grow out the more of the advisory side of it. So if an organization is asking us to say something, help shape the message or the identity, I kind of go in and make sure they're actually going to do it. And that way we're linking, what one says or represents with what they're actually doing. And if they're not doing it, then we won't say it. We'll say it differently.
Right.
So it's been a great journey because it's put some muscle on me that I didn't have, and I've been able to add a lot of value to the agency to deepen its, you know, its value, so that we can come in really as thought partners oftentimes and co-developers of ideas. So we're often now brought in, really at the concept phase, and we'll, you know, serve almost as a fractional entrepreneur or a fractional founder. And for those businesses, those ideas and those founders that we really truly believe in, oftentimes we'll take a little equity, to stay with them through the whole journey.
Okay. Any interesting brands you've worked with that you want to talk about?
You know, we're working on a project right now. It's under development in Miami called Grotto, and it's a social bathhouse. So, you know, traditionally Russian, Turkish, Korean culture have these bathhouses that you know, entire families will go to, and it's very social. It's different than what most Americans know as spas. You know, spa, you go in with your library voice and head down, and you go to your treatments and almost never see anybody else. So that's a decidedly private experience. But a social bathhouse has all the features of a spa. But the whole idea is to go in and hang out and socialize. And we have a, you know, food and beverage component with, you know, functional beverages and really delicious, you know, mezes. So we draw from a little bit of Turkish food culture and Russian food culture, particularly with the caviar. And, you know, the invitation in the setting is one that, you know, we would want people to come in and spend some time there. While, you know, kind of like with Tender Greens, you know, it's comfortable enough to stay. But if you want to come in and just do a cold plunge and go, you can do that too.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. That's very interesting. Very fascinating. Okay. Last question I got to ask you, what is your favorite menu item at Tender Greens? Do you have one? Do you have a favorite?
I guess the one that I miss the most is probably the Chipotle chicken salad. The one I probably make most often for myself is the salad niçoise. Especially this time of year when, you know, the beans and the tomatoes and all of the, you know, the great summer vegetables are in season. You know, I eat that a lot. But yeah, the Chipotle chicken salad was always just the craveable salad for me. The profile.
Yeah, that's good. I got to confess, I went there yesterday. I had the fried chicken again.
Oh, nice.
Hit it. It is awesome. I do have a coworker that she said she made me promise to ask you if you have any pull left over there to ask him to bring back the Chinese chicken salad.
Yeah. I'll see what I can do.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time, Eric. I really appreciate it. And yeah, can't wait to keep reading and seeing all the cool stuff you have coming up. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, my pleasure.